Chapter 19. Two or three days and nights went by. I reckon I might say they swum by, they slid along so quiet and smooth and lovely. Here is the way we put in the time. It was a monstrous big river down there, sometimes a mile and a half wide. We run nights and laid up and hid daytimes. Soon as night was most gone, we stopped navigating and tied up, nearly always in the dead water under a towhead, and then cut young cottonwoods and willows and hid the raft with them. Then we set out the lines. Next we slid into the river and had a swim so as to freshen up and cool off. Then we sat down on the sandy bottom where the water was about knee-deep and watched the daylight come. Not a sound anywheres, perfectly still. Just like the whole world was asleep, only sometimes the bullfrogs a-cluttering, maybe. The first thing to see, looking away over the water, was a kind of dull line. That was the woods on t'other side. You couldn't make nothing else out. Then a pale place in the sky. Then more paleness, spreading around. Then the river softened up, away off, and warn't black anymore, but gray. You could see little dark spots drifting along, ever so far away, trading scows and such things. And long black streaks, rafts. Sometimes you could hear a sweep screaking, or jumbled up voices, it was so still, and sounds come so far. And by and by you could see a streak on the water, which you know by the look of the streak that there's a snag there and a swift current which breaks on it and makes the streak look that way. And you see the mist curl up off of the water, and the east reddens up, and the river, and you make out a log cabin in the edge of the woods, away on the bank on t'other side of the river, being a woodyard likely, and piled by them cheats so you can throw a dog through it anywheres. Then the nice breeze springs up, and comes fanning you from over there so cool and fresh and sweet to smell on account of the woods and the flowers. But sometimes not that way, because they've left dead fish laying around, gars and such, and they do get pretty rank. And next you've got the full day, and everything's smiling in the sun, and the songbirds just going it. A little smoke couldn't be noticed now, so we would take some fish off of the lines and cook up a hot breakfast. And afterwards we would watch the lonesomeness of the river and kind of lazy along and by lazy off to sleep. Wake up by and by and look to see what done it, and maybe a steamboat coughing along upstream, so far off towards the other side you couldn't tell nothing about her, only whether she was stern wheel or side wheel. Then for about an hour there wouldn't be nothing to hear nor nothing to see, just solid lonesomeness. Next you'd see a raft sliding by, away off yonder, and maybe a galoot on it chopping, because they're most always doing it on a raft. You'd see the axe flash and come down. You don't hear nothing. You see that axe go up again, and by the time it's above the man's head, then you hear the ka-chunk. It took all that time to come over the water. So we would put in the day, lazying around, listening to the stillness. Once there was a thick fog, and the rafts and things that went by was beating tin pans, so the steamboats wouldn't run over them. A scow or a raft went by so close we could hear them talking and cussing and laughing, heard them plain, but we couldn't see no sign of them. It made you feel crawly. It was like spirits carrying on that way in the air. Jim said he believed it was spirits, but I says, no, spirits wouldn't say dern the dern fog. Soon as it was night, out we shoved. When we got her out to about the middle, we let her alone and let her float wherever the current wanted her to. Then we lit the pipes and dangled our legs in the water and talked about all kinds of things. We was always naked day and night whenever the mosquitoes would let us. The new clothes Buck's folks made for me was too good to be comfortable, and besides, I didn't go much on clothes nohow. Sometimes we'd have that whole river all to ourselves for the longest time. Yonder was the banks and the islands across the water, and maybe a spark, which was a candle in a cabin window. And sometimes on the water you could see a spark or two, on a raft or a scow, you know. And maybe you could hear a fiddle or a song coming over from one of them crafts. It's lovely to live on a raft. We had the sky up there all speckled with stars, and we used to lay on our backs and look up at them and discuss about whether they was made or only just happened. Jim, he allowed they was made, but I allowed they happened. I judged it would have took too long to make so many. Jim said the moon could have laid them. Well, that looked kind of reasonable, so I didn't say nothing against it, because I've seen a frog lay most as many, so of course it could be done. We used to watch the stars that fell, too, and see them streak down. Jim allowed they got spoiled and was hove out of the nest. Once or twice of a night we would see a steamboat slipping along in the dark, and now and then she would belch a whole world of sparks up out of her chimbleys, and they would rain down in the river and look awful pretty. Then she would turn a corner, and her lights would wink out, and her powwow shut off and leave the river still again. And by her waves would get to us a long time after she was gone, and joggle the raft a bit, and after that you wouldn't hear nothing, for you couldn't tell how long, except maybe frogs or something. After midnight the people on shore went to bed, and then for 2 or 3 hours the shores was black, no more sparks in the cabin windows. These sparks was our clock. The first one that showed again meant morning was coming, so we hunted a place to hide and tie up right away. One morning about daybreak I found a canoe and crossed over a chute to the main shore. It was only 200 yards, and paddled about a mile up a creek amongst the cypress woods to see if I couldn't get some berries. Just as I was passing a place where a kind of a cow path crossed the creek, here comes a couple of men tearing up the path as tight as they could foot it. I thought I was a goner, for whenever anybody was after anybody, I judged it was me, or maybe Jim. I was about to dig out from there in a hurry, but they was pretty close to me then and sung out and begged me to save their lives. Said they hadn't been doing nothing and was being chased for it. Said there was men and dogs a-coming. They wanted to jump right in, but I says, "Don't you do it. I don't hear the dogs and horses yet. You've got time to crowd through the brush and get up the creek a little ways. Then you take to the water and wade down to me and get in. That'll throw the dogs off the scent." They done it, and as soon as they was aboard, I lit out for our towhead, and in about 5 or 10 minutes we heard the dogs and the men away off, shouting. We heard them come along towards the creek, but couldn't see them. They seemed to stop and fool around a while. Then, as we got further and further away all the time, we couldn't hardly hear them at all. By the time we had left a mile of woods behind us and struck the river, everything was quiet, and we paddled over to the towhead and hid in the cottonwoods and was safe. One of these fellows was about 70 or upwards, and had a bald head and very gray whiskers. He had an old battered-up slouch hat on, and greasy blue woolen shirt, and ragged old blue jeans breeches stuffed into his boot tops, and home-knit galluses. No, he only had one. He had an old long-tailed blue jeans coat with slick brass buttons flung over his arm, and both of them had big, fat, ratty-looking carpet bags. The other fellow was about 30 and dressed about as ornery. After breakfast, we all laid off and talked, and the first thing that come out was that these chaps didn't know one another. "What got you into trouble?" says the bald head to the other chap. "Well, I'd been selling an article to take the tartar off the teeth, and it does take it off, too, and generally the enamel along with it. But I stayed about one night longer than I ought to, and was just in the act of sliding out when I ran across you on the trail this side of town, and you told me they were coming and begged me to help you get off. So I told you I was expecting trouble myself and would scatter out with you. That's the whole yarn. What's yourn?" "Well, I'd been a-running a little temperance revival there about a week and was the pet of the women folks, big and little, for I was making it mighty warm for the rummies, I tell you, and taking as much as $5 or $6 a night, 10 cents a head, children and niggers free, and business a-growing all the time. When somehow or another a little report got around last night that I had a way of putting in my time with a private jug on the sly. A nigger rousted me out this morning and told me the people was gathering on the quiet with the dogs and horses, and they'd be along pretty soon and give me about 30 minutes start and then run me down if they could. And if they got me, they'd tar and feather me and ride me on a rail shore. I didn't wait for no breakfast. I warn't hungry."
"Old man," says the young one, "I reckon we might double-team it together. What do you think?"
"I ain't undisposed. What's your line, mainly?"
"You're a printer by trade. I do a little in patent medicines. Theater actor, tragedy, you know. Take a turn at mesmerism and phrenology when there's a chance. Teach singing geography school for a change. Sling a lecture sometimes. Oh, I do lots of things, most anything that comes handy, so it ain't work. What's your lay?"
"I done considerable in the doctrine way in my time. Laying on of hands is my best holt for cancer and paralysis and such things, and I can tell a fortune pretty good when I've got somebody along to find out the facts for me. Preaching's my line, too, and working camp meetings, and missionarying around.